What do you do when your kid is hurting? Whether it's a splinter or a major illness, a child in distress is an alarming situation for a parent or a caregiver, and an excruciating one for the child, of course. But a kid's experience of pain is different from an adult's, and we grown-ups can have a hard time understanding, managing, and treating it. To help, Anna C. Wilson and Rachel Rabkin Peachman have written a new book called When Children Feel Pain, From Everyday Aches to Chronic Conditions. Anna is a pediatric psychologist and associate professor of pediatrics, and Rachel is a health and science journalist who's written for Consumer Reports, Parents, The Atlantic, and The New York Times. Here she is to share five big ideas from their book.
Hi, I'm Rachel Rabkin Peachman. I'm a journalist, and I've spent most of my career specializing in health, science, and family. I've written for many publications, including The New York Times and Consumer Reports. I'm also the co-author of When Children Feel Pain, From Everyday Aches to Chronic Conditions, What Every Parent and Practitioner Needs to Know. My co-author is Anna C. Wilson, a pediatric pain psychologist and associate professor at Oregon Health and Science University. I'd like to share with you the five big ideas we hope you'll take from our book. Big idea number one, children's pain management has been sidelined for far too long. Kids are hurting. An estimated 20% of children in the U.S. have pain that occurs every week or more. And about 5% of children in the U.S. deal with moderate to severe chronic pain that impacts their day-to-day functioning. But despite these alarming numbers, about half of children with chronic pain have been dismissed or not believed by adults, most often by their medical providers and their own parents. In fact, throughout most of modern medical history, pain in children has been dismissed, undertreated, or flat out ignored. But it's not because there is a lack of love for children or even a lack of treatments to help them. It's essentially because pain, especially pain in children, is poorly understood. It's subjective, it's hard to measure, and it's often invisible. And when pain is misunderstood, it gets sidelined. It's taken decades for medical professionals to even acknowledge that children feel pain as intensely as adults do. As recently as the 1980s, babies were undergoing invasive medical procedures like open-heart surgery without anesthesia or pain-relieving medications because physicians believed that infants' nervous systems were not mature enough to feel pain. There wasn't even a textbook devoted to pediatric pain until 1987, just 35 years ago. And to this day, many people don't realize that children can have chronic pain, which is pain lasting longer than 3 to 6 months, and tends to happen when neural pathways become hypersensitive, causing even small sensations to trigger intense pain signals. While there's now a large body of research that's proven that children do feel pain as intensely as adults do, managing that pain is still too often an afterthought, and this can have devastating consequences. Big idea number two. Short-term pain can have long-term consequences as far-reaching as adulthood. We've all heard the platitudes about pain. There's no pain, no gain, or you just need a Band-Aid, or it's not that bad, it'll be over soon. But what these phrases miss is that pain doesn't just impact people in the short term. Each episode of pain impacts our nervous system and the way we respond to future pain in the long term. And our early exposures to pain can be some of the most critical because they can shape a child's developing neural pathways. So even though babies and children may not consciously remember painful experiences, their nervous systems will. One of the most compelling studies about this was published in The Lancet in 1997. The researchers looked at infants in three categories: baby boys who had undergone circumcision without receiving pain management, baby boys who had been circumcised and had been given a topical pain treatment on their skin, and baby boys who had not been circumcised. The researchers then evaluated these babies when they received vaccinations at 4 months and at 6 months. What they found was that the infants who had not been circumcised cried the least after getting their shots, and the infants who cried the most were those who had been circumcised without pain management. What that tells us is that past experiences with pain can affect future responses to pain, and that when painful procedures are not well managed, an infant's nervous system can become more sensitized. In other words, every painful experience builds on the last. Many other studies have found that poorly managed pain early in life can also increase children's risk of developing chronic pain. And once a child develops chronic pain, it can be difficult to rein it in. Up to two-thirds of children who experience chronic pain go on to have chronic pain as adults. So how we treat pain in children is not just about the discomfort they feel in that moment. Treating children's pain effectively now, whether it's a vaccination, a broken bone, or chronic headaches, may be critical to reducing the incidence of chronic pain in adults. Big idea number three. Parents can have a big influence on alleviating their children's pain, whether it's acute or chronic. If you're a parent, I'd like you to ask yourself, do I know how to help my kids when they're in pain? There are mounds of parenting books devoted to advice on how to feed children, how to encourage their language development, how to help them sleep. But how many parents think about how to respond to their children when they're in pain, which is one of our most primal human experiences? Most of us have not been explicitly taught healthy ways to cope with pain. But some of the most effective pain-relieving tactics can actually be facilitated by parents. Think about acute pain, which is generally the type of pain you feel when you break a bone or touch a hot stove. It doesn't feel good, but its purpose is to protect you from further harm. It's your body's alarm system telling you that something is wrong. We can influence our perception of this pain by changing the environment around it and our associations with it. For instance, we can lessen the pain children feel when getting a vaccination or a blood draw by doing things like holding them, helping them take deep breaths, distracting them with videos, letting them suck on something sweet, and even talking with them about the experience afterward in more positive terms so that their memories of the experience don't negatively influence their future experiences with pain. It's also key for parents themselves to stay calm, because if we're stressed, that indicates to our kids that there's something to be scared of, which will heighten their anxiety and pain. Personally, when I take my kids to the pediatrician for vaccinations, I make sure I have sucking candies and I always have my phone ready with a funny video that they can watch as they get their shots. And it really helps. Treating chronic pain is different. Unlike acute pain, chronic pain does not serve as an alarm system to protect us. Chronic pain is best treated with a multidisciplinary approach that may or may not include medication. It can include cognitive behavioral therapy, physical therapy, breathing exercises, and guided meditation. It can also include behavioral modifications that have been proven to help. To understand how they work, it's helpful to know that stress and lack of sleep can make pain worse. Also, dwelling on pain and avoiding activities can cause kids to focus on the pain and feel isolated and depressed, which then feeds into the pain. So parents can really help by working with their kids to find ways to alleviate their stress, to maintain a consistent sleep schedule, and to keep up with normal activities as much as possible. Now, this can feel really hard, but the payoff is worth it. One teenager I spoke to found that the fewer activities she did because of her chronic migraine pain, the more her mood deteriorated. But when she participated in things, even if that was just going to school for half the morning or meeting a friend for an hour, her mood improved and she was able to cope much better when she had intense migraines. Big idea number four. Medication may be necessary, but it can be used safely, even opioids. There are a lot of misconceptions about children and pain medications, especially when it comes to opioids. Many people worry that giving strong pain medications to children and babies could damage their developing brains or lead to opioid addiction. But research shows that those fears are largely unwarranted when clinicians are appropriately prescribing pain relievers and supervising their patients. So let's break it down. When trying to alleviate acute pain, The medications typically used include over-the-counter analgesics, like acetaminophen, non-steroidal anti-inflammatory medications, like ibuprofen, and prescription opioids, which essentially block pain signals in the central nervous system. Yes, I said opioids. While we are in the middle of a deadly opioid epidemic in the U.S., these medications do have an important place in managing children's acute pain in certain situations. For example, opioids can be effective and necessary when treating a child's pain after surgery. Opioids may also be critical for children with diseases that are known to cause pain, like cancer and sickle cell disease. Still, opioids can have serious side effects, including nausea, constipation, cognitive impairment, and of course the risk of misuse and overdose if they're not taken under the supervision of a knowledgeable physician. So keep in mind that no medication is a magic pill, and that medications work best as part of a multifaceted plan. And regardless of what condition a child is facing, the medications they take should be used along with some of the psychological and behavioral approaches I mentioned earlier. If your child is prescribed opioids, it's a good idea to ask the clinician if you should consider non-opioid pain relievers first to see if those are effective. If opioids are necessary, be sure to talk to the prescribing doctor about the safest ways to use them and when and how to wean off the medication. Big idea number 5. Pain is personal and should be taken seriously. I hope I've illustrated that what we feel and how much we hurt is dependent on the brain's interpretation of a physical sensation and on the brain's assessment of many psychological and contextual factors, including the circumstances of the pain, a person's previous experiences with pain, and emotions like stress. That's why when you stub your toe, you might perceive a drastically different pain level than someone next to you who experiences the exact same injury. Your brain bases its response on the information it has learned in your life, in your body, and no one else's. So how we perceive pain is extremely individual and situational. It's important to remember this when children come to you for help with their pain. What may not seem like a big deal to you may feel like a very big deal to a child. Believe your children. Far too often, kids with pain are not only dismissed, they are stigmatized, devalued, and even ostracized. This is not just awful on its own. It can also lead to delayed diagnosis, treatment bias, and poor health outcomes. Notably, pain-related stigma is more likely to happen to girls, women, racial minorities, and gender-fluid individuals than to white boys and men. For so many of the children I spoke to, and so many of my co-author's patients, one of the hardest things about chronic pain is that people don't understand it or simply don't believe it's real. One mother talked about how it took months for doctors to take her teenage daughter seriously, despite her extreme pain. "We couldn't understand why no one would help her," she said. "She was screaming in agony, thrashing, fevered, and sweaty. And they wound up admitting her for about a week, but there was still a lot of skepticism about her pain." This child was eventually diagnosed with Ehlers-Danlos syndrome, which is a genetic disorder that causes excruciating pain and can take a long time to diagnose. But regardless of what was causing this child to feel pain, her pain was always real. And the sooner parents and medical providers acknowledge it, the sooner we can tackle it. So imagine for a moment if we all began to take a more thoughtful approach to pain, starting when children have their earliest experiences with pain. Maybe that's the day they're born and a nurse draws blood from their heel to test for congenital conditions. Or maybe it's when a toddler falls and needs stitches. Or when a teenager develops a backache after a sports injury. What if we could learn to spot that pain better, acknowledge it, and treat it before those developing neurons get out of control? Well, we can. And on top of that, the more we help children deal with pain now, the more we can stop the development of chronic pain in the next generation of adults. Thank you very much for listening. We hope you enjoy our book.
Thank you, Rachel. That was 5 big ideas from When Children Feel Pain From Everyday Aches to Chronic Conditions by Rachel Rabkin-Peachman and Anna C. Wilson. Even for adults, pain remains a complex and somewhat mysterious health issue. So check out our book bite for An Anatomy of Pain, How the Body and the Mind Experience and Endure Physical Suffering. I'm Michael Kovnat. Thanks for listening.